Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ken Venner to the broadcast. Ken is the Executive Vice President of Corporate Services and Chief Information Officer of Broadcom Corporation. Ken has held the CIO title since August of 2000, and he's responsible for providing a like-air working environment for the employees of Broadcom, referring to IT being up and available like air. His purview includes real estate, construction, facilities, security, travel, administrative services, and all business systems, computing, and telecommunications infrastructure. Prior to his time at Broadcom, Ken served as Vice President of Product Management and Chief Information Officer of Rockwell Electronic Commerce. Prior to that, Ken held a number of information sciences and information technology management positions for over 11 years at Lucent Technologies and AT&T Bell Laboratories. He received a BE from the Stevens Institute of Technology, an ME from Carnegie Mellon University, and an MBA from New Hampshire College. I recently caught up with Ken at Broadcom's headquarters in Irvine, California, and our conversation focused mostly on World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed Ken's approach to innovation on behalf of the company, the methods he uses to be both strategic and tactical, or stractical as he calls it, the role IT plays in acquisitions that Broadcom makes, and a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
And thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Well, I wonder, Ken, if you could begin by telling our listeners a bit more about Broadcom as well as your role in the organization.
Sure. Broadcom is a fabless semiconductor company, which means we have no manufacturing facilities per se in-house that we go through other companies to get all our manufacturing done. We're in the chip business that delivers communications technology. So think wired and wireless connectivity, cable set-top boxes, satellite set-top boxes, PCs and servers, iPhones, iPads, Cisco networking gear, all the things. You don't know our brand per se, but you know the brands that we go into. This company, I joined it 11 years ago, was 1,000 employees and about a $400 million organization. Over the 11 years I've been here, it's turned into a 10,000 employee organization and about $7.5 billion in revenue. 76% of those 10,000 employees are engineers, electrical or computer science. And my job is to deliver the information technology that enables those engineers to design world-class products that go into the things that you care about. On top of that, about 3 years ago, I also picked up the role as head of corporate services. And corporate services at Broadcom is real estate, facilities, administrative staff, travel, cafe, fitness, and physical security. So it's all the services that the employees use in order to get their jobs done, less getting paid or being promoted. So fundamentally picked that up to kind of increase rounding out my business side of the connection with the organization.
But nevertheless, I think unusual in that it is a broader role than just CIO. I think it probably speaks to you and speaks to your group's abilities to be able to expand the envelope of your responsibilities.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, when I joined the company 11 years ago, my boss, the CEO, said I wanted IT to be like air. Mm-hmm. Like air, to him, meant you don't even think about it. It just works. Now, that's a interesting statement and a great metaphor. It's kind of hard to figure out how to make things like PCs and cell phones and video conferencing like air, but that's the goal and the driver. And so in an organization that's highly acquisitive, we bought 67 other companies and integrated them into the company, and on a growth curve like we've been on, trying to keep the environment reliable, repeatable, scalable, maintainable, and still cost-effective with a like-air experience has designed an organizational structure that allows for scale and growth while delivering services in a predictable way. Having done that, 3 years ago, my boss gave me the opportunity to deliver that same kind of experience on the corporate services side. And given I have a deep, deep interest in business, I happen to do IT, but I'm more a business executive than an IT professional. It's kind of great to pick up a more operational side of the organization on top of the IT engine I was already driving.
That's great. And I think dovetailing on the point you made a moment ago of the fact that 76% of your employees or engineers, does that mean that 76% of your employees think that they can do your job? It's sort of the blessing and the curse. You have a technical body in this organization. It's not as though you are the sole facilitator or the sole leader of technology. There's technologists everywhere. Is this blessing or curse?
Yes. It's both. I mean, fundamentally, I'm working with the people who build the technology that I'm going to deploy, and therefore know it at a level I will never know. The difference when we get into these conversations is I have to deal with all the operational deployment issues they never think about. So they're thinking about, how do I make this Ethernet faster, right? And I'm going, how do I get it just to work so you don't even think about it? And so it's an interesting balance between the two organizations. But as you're pointing out, the people I serve perceive that if they wanted to, they could do my job and probably do it better than me, until they get in and try to do it. And then they realize it's a little more complicated than they think it is. So the nice part about it is, when I want to go do something, I don't generally struggle to educate people on what we're trying to do. In fact, most of the time I'm getting pressure from the organization to get out in front of things because they want to see us using the things that they've produced. So they want us to see us on 10 gig or 40 gig or 100 gig Ethernet. They were driving us to put iPhones in here. They're not driving us to get Android phones in here. Even though they're more consumer-oriented products and not really ready for the enterprise, these guys are going like, my Bluetooth, my GPS, my Wi-Fi, and my baseband are in these products. I want you to bring these products in. And then I have to sit down and explain to them the complication associated with bringing that product in and why it may not quite be ready, but I'm very motivated on working with them to get it done.
That makes sense. Ken, I've noted as part of your responsibilities, actually just articulated it a bit, that innovation is at least something that you and your team are thinking about to some extent, obviously. And in some ways, you're pushing the rest of the organization from an innovation perspective. Actually, the example you just gave is, in some cases, also you're the governor on pushing things too fast and too furiously, especially in light of the fact that you've got so many technologists that want to try the brand new thing and press the envelope whenever they can. Can you talk a little bit further about your approach to thinking about innovation and introducing new technologies?
Yeah, so clearly at other companies I've worked in, it's been a much more IT pushes innovation into the business and helps them move along, because the organization isn't that technical and is more focused around their operational exercise and activities. And there is some of that here, in that IT does get to see a larger swath of the organization and see how enabling certain things for reliability, effectiveness, efficiency, and just streamlining, we can come at it differently than the people who are in the trenches actually doing the day-to-day work, right? And so then it's about coaching people along, exposing them to opportunities, and helping them see where the opportunity for change and enhancements exist. And the structure I use at Broadcom is what I like to coin as crawl, walk, run. Instead of trying to create this overarching, huge solution to the problem, it's, let's get a prototype up. And potentially it could be thrown away, but let's kind of do a 2 to 3 week Skunk Works project. Let's examine this thing. Let's get some developers in here and quickly throw something together and go, does this feel like we're heading in the right direction for you? And if you do that and you take the customer, your business partners along on the journey, and they're creatively changing the concept, you're both learning and doing, they're engaged. Versus when I was at AT&T and we were doing the big corporate IT thing, the business analysts would come over and talk to you. We'd interview you for a month. We'd go away for 3 months. We'd write a requirements document. We'd hand it to development. They'd go off for 6 months or a year. They'd write something. Then we'd come back to you and try to test with you. And you'd just look at me and go, what are we working on again? Because you've moved to some other problem that you're trying to solve at that time. So trying to drive innovation is seeing the opportunity and then quickly prototyping things, getting traction, and then potentially going off and building something more robust around the prototype you've already built. And then off of that base, start another prototyping phase, one level up from there. Mm-hmm. So that's how I do it mostly in the company. And then, as I was pointing out before, I don't seem to lack opportunities where people are trying to poke me to go do more innovative things, because they're seeing it from a different angle and they're asking questions. And then I've got to deal with, all right, it's great to be innovative, but you still got to sustain or maintain this reliable, repeatable, scalable, maintainable structure that people have gotten used to. So you get into this conversation of, this isn't quite ready yet. And so unless you want to invest a lot of money to have this crack little team on the side to help support this piece of innovation, we're not ready, so let's go back into the market and work those people to get them to get the product to a point where it could actually be consumed by the organization.
That makes sense. That actually dovetails nicely to a topic I, in preparation, had read that you focused on before about the CIO's need to balance being strategic as well as tactical. In fact, I believe you coined a phrase called stractical.
Stractical, sort of, yeah, exactly.
To describe that. How do you achieve that balance in your mind?
And this is a conversation I had with my own organization. There is the like air experience, the basic foundational building block of the IT organization. And if you don't have that in place and operating and you try to do anything above that level, it's kind of like Maslow's law of needs. And if you don't have the basics tactically executing, they don't really want you working on anything strategic and they won't give you any credit. In fact, the term I use in my own organization is, the value of the IT organization is defined by the last interaction with the help desk. Because that's most consumers' perception of the IT organization. Even though you've got world-class biz apps designers and network engineers and compute and storage engineers and all these really brainiac guys, it's really the last interaction I had with the help desk that kind of values or devalues the CIO and the entire organization. And so structuring the world that you've got that, you've put it in place, you've enabled that organization, and you've simplified the environment. So I'm also a big believer in limited diversity in IT. I think limiting the number of different vendors, the different numbers of technologies, trying to make similar things all around the world creates an opportunity where a global organization can support its global operations. And that takes care of the tactical piece. But having the strategy of limited diversity is a strategy, because if you're not paying attention to it, you will allow each purchasing decision to allow you to diversify your organization. Diversifying the technology then equals more people. More people equals more expense for not necessarily a greater amount of value.
Great points. You mentioned actually that yours is a rather long tenure actually as CIOs go. It seems like you're about three or four times the average CIO in terms of tenure. What sort of advantages has that given you? I don't know if at the outset you would have guessed that you would be in this role for so long, and whether or not, you know, therefore you had the long-term perspective from the get-go. But clearly now you have woven yourself into the strategic fabric of the business. You report to the CEO. Yeah. Your role has augmented.
Expanded. Yep.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about the advantages of being a longer tenured CIO?
Well, it's both an advantage and a disadvantage,
okay.
I'll say.
Yes,
so the advantage is, I can basically tell you the story of how we got to where we are and what trade-offs and decisions we made in getting where we are, and either defend it or be willing to throw it under the bus and just go, you know, sacred cow, we don't touch that one, or we got to this point because we made a decision 3 years ago that we didn't want to spend this much money on this particular thing and did those kinds of things. I also happen to know most of my peers. I'm very close to all of my peers, have great working relationships with them, and I've been here a long enough time that it's one of those, we're comfortable with the push-pull relationship of what we're doing, and I've been able to grow enough credibility in my organization's ability to deliver that I have the respect of the organization that if we agree we're going to go do something strategically and tactically, we'll think it through as a group, and then tactically my team will absolutely execute on the task within budget, within scope, get it done. And I am amazed I've been here 11 years. I don't think I'd ever have thought I would have been in a particular job for 11 years. The beautiful thing is it's never been the same job 2 years in a row. I mean, going from a $400 million organization to a $7.5 billion organization, each one of those steps in the plateau, it's a different business. It's a different structure. You have to re-engineer how you're doing what you're doing. The problems we're trying to solve are different problems. The economy's all different. And then, you know, just picking up additional pieces of the organization completely swing you into a whole different direction and make you rethink what you're doing. So it's been a lot of fun. The downside of being here this long is blind spots. Mm-hmm. So as I get new executives into the company, spending the time to pay attention to, I can defend what we've got because I've got the history. It also means I can defend what we've got because I've got the history. That's both a positive and a negative, and I've got to be open enough to hear others coming in going, wow, I don't know why you would do it that way, mm-hmm. and not get defensive about it. Hear them, understand them, educate them, and then be open to going, oh, maybe there is a different way. Maybe we should go do something different.
Yeah, that makes good sense. This is clearly a very acquisitive company. There's the recent news that the organization is going to purchase Netlogic, for example.
Yep.
And I realize that That is news that's fresh enough that you probably can't go into the details.
Late-breaking news.
Exactly right. But I thought maybe we could speak briefly about the past and the thought process that you've put in, now been having gone through so many acquisitions, having brought in a great number of organizations, people, technologies, processes, thinking about how you meld those, thinking about what you leave the acquired entity to do on their own. Can you talk a bit about the blueprint or game plan that you typically go through post-acquisition?
Sure. So we've been acquiring companies. I think we're up at around 66 or 67 now. The first three, we didn't really have a game plan. It was all new to all of us. We were just doing it. The first three took the longest to ever integrate and become part of the organization. After those, we did put a blueprint together. And I'll go, so there's some fundamental principles you got to think about in acquisition, because I'd also done this on the AT&T side where it was more of a merger than an acquisition. I don't believe there should ever be mergers. I only believe there should be acquisitions. There should be no confusion about who bought whom and why they were bought and what they're bought to do. And then, as I will say, when I've acquired you, I'm going to hit you once. I'm going to hit you hard. I'm going to change your entire world. But shortly thereafter, everything will become better than it was before. But there's no confusion. I bought you and you're about to go on a journey with me, not the other way around. And so we have a playbook that says within 6 months of close, the old company basically no longer exists. They're completely integrated into the organization. On the day of close, they've got accounts within Broadcom. They've got email within Broadcom. There's intercompany connectivity from a network perspective. Within, I think, 60 days, all the systems are transferred over into Broadcom, so all their order management systems, billing, finance, all that stuff, we've pulled all their data out, shoved it into our platform, and we're now running their business on top of our platform. And the longest lead time, because everybody we acquire isn't generally at, we're not after their revenue, we're after their engineers and their designs and their customers. And so really the longest pole in the tent for us is getting the engineering environments to become equivalent to the ones that we've got. So it's educating them, it's then starting that transformation and transition, and then pulling them together. And again, the value proposition for us is you're a great company and you built a great product by yourself. And we're very excited about that. And you're probably the leader in what you do. But the value proposition of your company is for you to spread your pixie dust throughout the entire company. And therefore, what we need to do is get you integrated into the company so that your designs can be leveraged across the entire design base of the company, which is why we need to make you look more similar to everybody else. Now, the beautiful thing in the EDA space is, or the chip design business, is people design in a very similar fashion. The tools, the technology, they're if they're not identical, they're very similar. So the transition isn't that difficult. It's just the pain of change, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's comfortable doing what they're doing and doing it a different way. But again, as you walk in and you're very clear about your acquisition strategy and you're communicating all the time, you're setting timelines and deadlines, people tend to just, the acquiring company expects this to happen, which is the other lesson I learned. You do it soon. You do not let them sit too long. The first three we didn't do this to, it took us 5 years to get them integrated because they basically settled into, we're going to run our business this way. So we had to fight to get them to change. Versus an acquired company, we will walk in, say this is going to happen. They're going, yeah, whatever. We expected that to happen. What do we need to do to help you? And then they'll go on the journey with you.
Very interesting. Well, I wanted to lead, Ken, with asking you a bit more about trends that particularly excite you. As you think, as you look in your own crystal ball and you think about what's happening in the future, you've already talked about several of them that impact this business, like consumerization of IT, for instance. What other trends do you think are particularly germane to your business that particularly excite you today?
You know, so consumerization of IT is the hot one. Yeah. I think another one is the ever-increasing amount of video as a driver of content and collaboration. And it's getting simpler to do, so people have a greater degree of expectation of video content enabled in what they're doing, either real-time or stored. So YouTube is creating this whole concept of video everywhere all the time activity. And I think for IT professionals, the concept of getting out of the infrastructure business, it's not there yet, but it's coming, and it's just a matter of when. So cloud computing, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, however you look at it. I mean, most of the time, IT professionals have thought about the laptop that you've got, the network that we've built, the compute storage that we've got. And I'm going to say there's going to be a small contingent of the IT organization that's going to go do that as a service provider, be it Azure or Google or Facebook or Amazon. But the most of the IT professionals, this career is going to change. and become more about how does IT get consumed, used to leverage the business to go get things done, and where the firewall is becomes a new concept of, well, what is a firewall? Where is it? What's inside? What's outside? So tie in all that, I think IP security is the thing that's underplayed in the marketplace today, and not enough people are thinking about, well, my information's all over the place. I don't, you know, if you have Dropbox or Evernote, Twitter, all these places where people don't even think about it. They're just collaborating, and yet your core IP is sitting out there in these environments. How do you protect that core value? When the old model used to be, well, I just build, you know, this mushy safe inside with this really hard wall on the outside, and the bad guys are out and the good guys are in. And now it's, well, where is everybody? And you want to be on your iPad and an airport and Helsinki working on stuff. Well, how do you make all that work? But I really think those are the trends that I see the marketplace heading towards.
That's good. And as you think about the pace with which an organization can embrace those trends, what are sort of the factors? You've mentioned a few of them, that you can't move too fast, too furiously. Is it a question of the maturity of some of these technologies and ways of doing business? Is it the ability of the organization to digest those? Is it a combination of those things?
It is, I think, a combination of both. There is the technology getting to a particular point where it can actually deliver the service that you want. And for the business to be willing to find and enable a use case for understanding the business risks you're going to take. So this is also a risk mitigation or a risk management structure and strategy associated with what you're going to do. And the depressing thing is, as an IT professional, I'm not in control of it anymore. I mean, this really is mostly consumer-oriented capabilities being picked up by your employees that make your employees more productive, who aren't necessarily thinking about security or reliability, but they're doing it to you. And so how do you nurture, that goes back to your innovation conversation, how do you nurture those employees? Because it may not come out of the IT organization. The IT organization may shepherd it and help move it along, but there's really bright people in the business that have enough technical background that they'll just go do it. And what you want is not to be left behind or not thought of. What you want to do is go on this experiment with them and make sure they're educated about the things they're not thinking about. Privacy, security, blah, 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 all that stuff. And then reliability. I mean, Amazon goes down for a day and a whole bunch of businesses go off the air. And look, who'd ever thought that to happen,
yeah,
right?
Simple, yeah.
And so now you're going, all right, well, and if you design around it, you're going, all right, I won't put things that are revenue facing up on that technology or have another place I can load it to. Mm-hmm. But I can still run a whole bunch of stuff over here and figure out how to make it work. And I think, you know, clearly saying not for me is a dangerous statement for a CIO. You've got to always be going, here are the risks and issues, and here's why it's not yet working for me, but I've got my team prototyping stuff and evaluating stuff and figuring it out. Because the trend is going to head that way, and what you don't want to be is the last one to make the move over.
Makes sense. Makes very good sense. Well, Ken Benner, thank you so much for being with us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives.
And thank you very much for having me.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat's business is built on the power of community-driven innovation, and it's this approach that enables customers to meet the demands of today's enterprise and prepare for tomorrow's opportunities. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation and visit redhat.com today to learn more. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.